outside the green grids. Red was dead. The blue pinpoints were the manacles of individual slaves at Ground Zero. Christy looked around for something to smash the comp with, and finding nothing more suitable, picked up a small chair. As she raised it over her head, the door to the room opened.
I wouldn't do that if I were you. What do you mean your troopers are unable to control the situation? They have armor and weapons. The workers are defenseless.
It looks like the slaves got their hands on some pulse rifles. They overpowered a couple of guards and stripped them of their armor and weapons. At this point, things are, well, fluid.
Fluid? You mean they could go either way?
The man nodded grimly, then braced himself for more verbal attack by his commander. He wasn't disappointed. Dreda put a finger in his face.
I ordered you to maximize output at the mines, and instead you have jeopardized everything! Everything! I should never have put men in charge there. But I figured that slaves, underwatered, underfed, overworked slaves, mind you, I thought even you could handle that. I underestimated them and I overestimated you.
To regain control of the mines, we're going to need reinforcements. We've lost men out there. They need to be replaced.
So, I'm going to have to spend fuel and time recovering what shouldn't have been lost in the first place. The question is, should I even bother? Hoth, what is your analysis of the situation?
The cost-benefit ratio is difficult to quantify. There's no way of estimating the additional fuel and the time that will be required to retake the mines. Recovering the loss of time is impossible, obviously. Recovering the lost fuel depends on how quickly control is regained. If the expended fuel can't be recovered in the time remaining, with some considerable extra to boot, there's no advantage to putting down the slave rebellion. To do so would only mean less energy available before and after the jump.
I get the feeling that everything's closing in on me. Everywhere I turn, I find a dead end, and I don't like it!
The options are definitely narrowing, Dredda. I suggest an immediate, limited operation. Commit as few irreplaceable resources as possible. If, during the confrontation, the opposition gives any hint that it can't sustain itself, throw everything at them.
Sounds reasonable. You! I want you on the road to Ground Zero in 2 minutes with 50 troopers in 4 of the attack wags. I want that compound secured in 30 minutes and the ore wags rolling again. If you cannot accomplish that, don't even bother coming back.
The trooper started to say something, but thought better of it. He saluted, then turned stiffly and left the room. Dreda called in the pair of sister gyropilots who'd been waiting in the corridor.
Laska, Chroma, we've got a major crisis on our hands. There's been a slave revolt at the mines. The troopers stationed there haven't been able to get it under control. The flow of ore has been cut off, which means we can't maximize our fuel stockpile before the jump. We'll have to take even less equipment with us.
What do you want us to do, Dreda?
I want you to attack Ground Zero from the air, Laska. I want you to break the back of the rebellion with a minimum loss of life and limb on the worker side. It can't be an indiscriminate slaughter because we need the slaves to mine the ore. If you injure too many, the operation becomes pointless.
Understood.
Now, listen very carefully. This is most important. If anything happens that eliminates the possibility of recovering more ore from the mines, I want you to break off contact immediately and return here. Is that clear?
If the supply line break looks permanent, we come back at once.
That's right. If no more ore can be extracted, there's no use burning additional fuel, not to mention risking your lives and the 2 gyroplanes. At that point, it becomes a cut-our-losses situation. We'll have to make do with what we have.
And the troopers on the ground? What's going to happen to them if we withdraw?
I hadn't planned on taking any of the males with us anyway. There isn't enough fuel to transport both them and the gear we need. They're just extra baggage, as far as I'm concerned.
As the pilots hurried out of the room, Dreda felt a gnawing pain in the pit of her stomach. Other reality jumps had always been part of her master plan. Eventually, each of the original sisters would have her own shadow world to rule, and their unique kind would disperse through the limitless near-mirror-image parallels in time-space, proliferating themselves in each reality, using up the available resources before moving on. Always moving on. She never considered the possibility that their first jump might end so prematurely, in such disarray, in such a nightmare of unforeseeable circumstances and inexcusable blunders. Dreda looked over at Hoth, who stood with his arms folded across his chest.
What the hell are you smiling at?
Gradually, as Ryan and JB climbed away from Ground Zero and the bottom of the nuke's crater, a ribbon of the real world appeared on the horizon on all sides. Snow-covered mountaintops peaked above the glass rim, then familiar red mesas. The sense of oppression that both men had felt before began to lift. They'd been traveling about 15 minutes when another ore wag rounded a curve in front of them. This one was empty and headed back to the mines. It eased over onto the right-hand side of the road so the vehicles could pass without a collision. The two men flattened themselves on the glass until after the truck went by.
That trooper's in for the shock of his life.
Damn well better be.
When their wag reached the last rise leading to Slake City, the driver shifted into low gear and they crawled up the grade. Minutes later, as the wag finally cleared the top of the rise, Ryan looked down the long slope that ended in the invader's compound. Even from a distance of 1,500 yards, he could see the intense activity that seemed to be concentrated in a small section of the plain. The tiny black figures were running to wags, which were parked in formation beside the cluster of domes. As he watched, a pair of gyroplanes lifted off from the landing strip, and one of the wags started up and headed toward the entrance to the road.
It looks like they've got a bug up their asses. You think Mildred and Jack made their play?
Could be. This is the Otherworlder's response. They could be getting ready to launch an attack on Ground Zero.
Or they could be getting ready for us. If they found the naked troopers, they might have guessed we're in their suits. If that's the case, that wag coming our way is big trouble. We've got no weapons and nowhere to run.
So we'll just stay put and play it out. Let's screw on our helmets and keep down.
The first assault wag zoomed up the track toward them, but it didn't slow down or stop. Ryan watched it go by through the crack between the wag's rear gate and side frame. JB gave Ryan a thumbs-up sign. Their wag continued down the road. When it reached the edge of the glass and rumbled onto the dirt, three more assault wags roared around it and shot up the road toward Ground Zero. The ore wag circled the domes and stopped beside the processing trailer, where another truck was in the middle of being unloaded. Ryan tapped JB on the helmet, and they bailed out of the back. Vaulting the far side of the bed, they scrambled to the ground. Then they moved quickly around the front of the wag and along the side of the trailer. The compound was in complete chaos. And it wasn't just men readying themselves for battle. Troopers were pounding fluorescent pink perimeter markers into the dirt, creating a roughly elliptical shape around a lineup of their mobile gear. At either end of the row were big black trailers, not ore processors. These had no hoppers for dumping in new glass. They were connected to the fuel trailer by long, thick black hoses. They were the only machines connected to the fuel trailer, which stood in the middle and to one side of the ellipse. Around the processor, there was a frantic jockeying of other gear. Troopers were using wags to tow gyros into the line. The aircraft's rotors were secured for transport, folded up into points above their fuselages. Other equipment was stacked on pallets, covered with plastic webbing. Ryan could see battle-suited troopers carrying stuff out of the cluster of domes, moving it inside the marked perimeter.
What the blazes is all this about?
Looks like moving day, except for that.
Ryan pointed up the road at the last of the four wags as it disappeared over the summit of the rise. The two gyros were long gone.
They're definitely sending troops to Ground Zero. The assault wags will take some time to get there, but not the gyros. They'll be within striking distance in a few minutes. We've got to find the main comp and disable the cuffs.
What about Christy?
The cuffs first, then Christy.
Ryan took Dean's bone blade out of the top of his boot and palmed it.
Let's go, JB.
They started walking for the entrance to the domes. Because everyone else was running, Ryan broke into a trot. He and JB blended right in. No one paid them any mind. The other troopers were too preoccupied with their own duties to notice the unusual condensation on the inside of their visors or the crude puncture holes in the backs of their helmets. Ryan knew the possibility that the naked troopers had been discovered and they were heading into a trap was growing less and less likely, which was a break since their only chance of a firefight broke out was to be inside the structures. As they entered the doorway, a pair of troopers exited carrying armfuls of green canisters. The doors along the hallway were all ajar. Ryan slowed his pace so he could look into each of them as he passed by. JB followed closely behind him. The rooms looked ransacked, and there were no cops in evidence. More troopers came their way, pushing dollies stacked with heavy crates. They passed in the corridor without incident. Then Ryan looked into a room on the right and saw a trooper bent over something that might have been a comp. When he stopped in the doorway, the trooper looked back through a cleared visor. He was bent over a black cube on little wheels.